Memorials of the Faithful by Abdu'l-Bahá. Your reader is Mary Ellen Baker. This is Tape 3, Side 1, page 86. His Eminence Halim, Mirza Musa. Jinabi Mirza Musa was the true brother of Baha'u'llah, and from earliest childhood he was reared in the sheltering embrace of the Most Great Name. He drank in the love of God with his mother's milk. When yet a suckling, he showed an extraordinary attachment to the Blessed Beauty. At all times he was the object of divine grace, favor, and loving kindness. After their distinguished father died, Mirza Musa was brought up by Baha'u'llah, growing to maturity in the haven of his care. Day by day the youth's servitude and devotion increased. In all things he lived according to the commandments, and he was entirely severed from any thoughts of this world. Like a bright lamp he shone out in that household. He wished neither rank nor office, and had no worldly aims at all. His one supreme desire was to serve Baha'u'llah, and for this reason he was never separated from his brother's presence. No matter what torments the others inflicted, his loyalty equaled the cruelty of the rest, for he had drunk the wine of unadulterated love. Then the voice was heard, crying out of Shiraz, and from a single utterance of Baha'u'llah his heart was filled with light, and from a single gust that blew over the gardens of faith he caught the fragrance. At once he began to serve the friends. He had an extraordinary attachment to me, and was at all times concerned for my well-being. In Tehran he occupied himself day and night with propagating the faith, and gradually became well known to everyone. Habitually he spent his time in the company of blessed souls. Baha'u'llah then left Tehran, journeying to Iraq, and of his brothers, the two who were in his company were Akhay Halim, that is, Mirza Musa, and Mirza Muhammad Khuli. They turned their faces away from Persia and the Persians, and closed their eyes to comfort and peace. In the Beloved's path they chose with all their hearts to bear whatever calamity should be their lot. Thus they arrived in Iraq. During the days when Baha'u'llah had vanished from sight, that is, when he was on the journey to Kurdistan, Akhay Halim lived on the edge of an abyss. His life was constantly in danger, and each day that passed was worse than the one before. Still, he bore it all and knew no fear. When at last the Blessed Beauty returned out of Kurdistan, Akhay Halim resumed his post by the Holy Threshold, rendering every service within his power. For this he became known far and wide. At the time when Baha'u'llah left Baghdad for Constantinople, Akhay Halim was with him, and continued to serve along the way, as he did on the further journey from Constantinople to Adrianople. It was during this sojourn in this latter city that he detected from Mirza Yahya the odor of rebellion. Day and night he tried to make him mend his ways, but all to no avail. On the contrary, it was astonishing how, like a deadly poison, the temptings and satanic suggestions of Sayyid Muhammad worked on Mirza Yahya, so that Akhay Halim finally abandoned hope. Even then he never ceased trying, thinking that somehow perhaps he could still the tempest and rescue Mirza Yahya from the gulf. His heart was worn away with despair and grief. He tried everything he knew. At last he had to admit the truth of these words of Sana'i. Quote, "If to the fool my lore you'd bring, or think my secrets can be told to him who is not wise, then to the deaf go harp and sing, or stand before the blind and hold a mirror to his eyes." Unquote. When all hope was gone, he ended the relationship, saying, quote, "O my brother, if others are in doubt as to this affair, you and I both know the truth. Have you forgotten the loving kindness of Baha'u'llah and how he trained us both? What care he took with your lessons and your penmanship, how constantly he saw to your spelling and your composition, and encouraged you to practice the different calligraphic styles. He even guided your copy with his own blessed fingers. Who does not know how he showered favors on you, how he brought you up in the haven of his embrace? Is this your thanks for all his tenderness, that you plot with Sayyid Muhammad and desert the shelter of Baha'u'llah? Is this your loyalty? Is this the right return for all his love? Unquote. The words had no effect whatever. On the contrary, and with each passing day, Mirza Yahya disclosed a greater measure of his concealed intent. Then, at the end, the final rupture took place. From Adrianople, Achai Halim went on with the convoy of Baha'u'llah to the fortress of Acha. His name was specifically listed in the Sultan's decree, and he was condemned to perpetual banishment. He devoted all his time in the most great prison to serving Baha'u'llah, and had the honor of being continually in his brother's presence, also keeping company with the believers, until at last he left this world of dust and hastened to the holy world above, dying with lowliness and contrition as he supplicated his Lord. It happened that during the Baghdad period, the well-known Ilkhani, son of Mirza Khani Khazrini, received through Syed Javad-e-Tabaqtaba'i an audience with Baha'u'llah. Syed Javad on that occasion made a plea in Ilkhani's behalf, saying, quote, "This Ilkhani, Ali Khuli Khan, although a sinner and a lifelong creature of his passions, has now repented. He stands before you with regret as to his former ways, and from this day forward he will not so much as draw breath that might be contrary to your good pleasure. I beg of you, accept his repentance, make him the object of your grace and favor." Unquote. Baha'u'llah replied, quote, "Because he has chosen you as intercessor, I will hide away his sins, and I will take steps to bring him comfort and peace of mind." Unquote. The Ilkhani had been a man of unlimited wealth, but he had wasted it all on the desires of the flesh. He was now destitute, to such a point that he did not even dare to step outside his house, because of the creditors waiting there to fall upon him. Baha'u'llah directed him to go to Omar Pasha, the governor of Damascus, and obtain from him a letter of recommendation to Constantinople. The Ilkhani complied, and he received every assistance from the governor of Baghdad. After utter despair, he began to hope again and left for Constantinople. When he arrived at Diyarbakir, he penned a letter on behalf of two Armenian merchants. Quote, "These two are about to leave for Baghdad," his letter said. "They have shown me every courtesy and have also asked me for an introduction. I had no refuge or shelter except your bounty. Thus I beg of you to show them favor." Unquote. The superscription, that is, the address he had written on the envelope, was "To His Eminence Baha'u'llah, Leader of the Babis." The merchants presented this letter to Baha'u'llah at the head of the bridge, and when he inquired about it, their reply was, quote, "In Diyarbakir, the Ilkhani gave us particulars as to this cause." Unquote. Then they accompanied him to his house. When the Blessed Beauty entered the family apartments, Achai Halim was there to meet him. Baha'u'llah cried out, "Halim, Halim, the fame of the cause of God has reached as far as Diyarbakir," and he was smiling, jubilant. Mirza Musa was indeed a true brother to the Blessed Beauty. This is why he remained steadfast under all conditions to the very end. Unto him be praise and salutations, and the breath of life and glory. Upon him be mercy and grace. Haji Muhammad Khan, another of those who left their homes and came to settle in the neighborhood of Baha'u'llah, was Haji Muhammad Khan. This distinguished man, a native of Sistan, was a Baluch. When he was very young, he caught fire and became a mystic, an Arif, or adept. As a wandering dervish, completely selfless, he went out from his home and, following the dervish rule, traveled about in search of his murshid, his perfect leader. For he yearned, as a khalandar, dervishes would say, to discover that, quote, "priest of the Magi," unquote, or spiritual guide. Far and wide he carried on his search. He would speak to everyone he met, but what he longed for was the sweet scent of the love of God, and this he was unable to detect in anyone, whether Gnostic or philosopher or member of the Sheikhi sect. All he could see in the dervishes was their tufted beards and their palms-up religion of beggary. They were dervish, poor in all save God, in name only. All they cared about, it seemed to him, was whatever came to hand. nor did he find illumination among the Illuminati. He heard nothing from them but idle argument. He observed that their grandiloquence was not eloquence, and that their subtleties were but windy figures of speech. Truth was not there. The core of inner meaning was absent. For true philosophy is that which produces rewards of excellence, and among these learned men there was no such fruit to be found. At the peak of their accomplishment, they became the slaves of vice, led an unconcerned life, and were given over to personal characteristics that were deserving of blame. To him, of all that constitutes the high, distinguishing quality of humankind, they were devoid. As for the Sheikhi group, their essence was gone. Only the dregs remained. The kernel of them had vanished, leaving the shell behind. Most of their dialectics was lumber and superfluities by now. Thus, at the very moment when he heard the call from the kingdom of God, he shouted, quote, "Yea, verily," unquote, and he was off like the desert wind. He traveled over vast distances, arrived at the most great prison, and attained the presence of Baha'u'llah. When his eyes fell upon that bright countenance, he was instantly enslaved. He returned to Persia so that he could meet with those people who professed to be following the path, those friends of other days who were seeking out the truth, and deal with them as his loyalty and duty required. Both going and returning, the Haji betook himself to each one of his friends, foregathered with them, and let each one hear the new song from heaven. He reached his homeland and set his family's affairs in order, providing for all, seeing to the security, happiness, and comfort of each one. After that, he bade them all goodbye. To his relatives, his wife, children, kin, he said, "Do not look for me again. Do not wait for my return." He took up a staff and wandered away. Over the mountains he went, across the plains, seeking and finding the mystics, his friends. On his first journey, he went to the late Mirza Yusuf Khan, Mustafiul Mamalik, in Tehran. When he had said his say, Yusuf Khan expressed a wish and declared that should it be fulfilled, he would believe. The wish was to be given a son. Should such a bounty become his, Yusuf Khan would be won over. The Haji reported this to Baha'u'llah and received a firm promise in reply. Accordingly, when the Haji met with Yusuf Khan on his second journey, he found him with a child in his arms. "Mirza," the Haji cried, "praise be to God. Your test has demonstrated the truth. You snared your bird of joy." "Yes," answered Yusuf Khan, "the proof is clear. I am convinced. This year, when you go to Baha'u'llah, say that I implore his grace and favor for this child, so that it may be kept safe in the sheltering care of God." Haji Muhammad then went to the blissful future martyr, the King of Martyrs, and asked him to intercede so that he, the Haji, might be allowed to keep watch at the doorway of Baha'u'llah. The King of Martyrs sent in this request by letter, after which Haji Khan duly arrived at the Most Great Prison and made his home in the neighborhood of his loving friend. He enjoyed this honor for a long time, and later, in the Mazra'i garden as well, he was very frequently in Baha'u'llah's presence. After the beloved had ascended, Haji Khan remained faithful to the covenant and testament, shunning the hypocrites. At last, when this servant was absent on the journeys to Europe and America, the Haji made his way to the traveler's hospice at the Hazirat al-Quds, and here, beside the shrine of the Bab, he took his flight to the world above. May God refresh his spirit with the musk-scented air of the Abha Paradise and the sweet savors of holiness that blow from the highest heaven. Unto him be greetings and praise. His bright tomb is in Haifa. Akh Muhammad Ibrahim Amir. Muhammad Ibrahim Amir came from Nayriz. He was a blessed person. He was like a cup filled with the red wine of faith. At the time when he was first made captive by the tender loved one, he was in the flower of his youth. Then he fell a prey to the oppressors, and following the upheaval in Nayriz and all the suffering, his persecutors laid hold of him. Three farashas pinned his arms and tied his hands behind him, but the Amir, by main strength, burst his bonds, snatched a dagger from a farash's belt, saved himself, and ran away to Iraq. There he engaged in writing down the sacred verses, and later won the honor of serving at the holy threshold. Constant and steadfast, he remained on duty day and night. During the journey from Baghdad to Constantinople, from there to Adrianople, and from there to the most great prison, he was always at hand to serve. He married the handmaid of God, Havive, who also served at the threshold, and his daughter, Badie, became the helpmeet of the late Hosseinacha Chavi Chi. Thus the Amir was steadfast in service throughout his life. But after the ascension of Baha'u'llah, his health steadily declined, and at last he left this world of dust behind him and hastened away to the unsullied world above. May God illumine the place where he rests with rays from the all-highest realm. Unto him be salutations and praise. His bright shrine is in Acha. Mirza Mehdi I Kashani. This honored man, Mirza Mehdi, was from Kashan. In early youth, under his father's tutelage, he had studied sciences and arts, and had become skilled in composing both prose and verse, as well as in producing calligraphy in the style known as Shikashti. That is, Shikashti is broken. A cursive or half-shorthand script is thought to have been invented at the close of the 17th century in Herat. He was singled out from his fellows, head and shoulders above the rest. When still a child, he learned of the Lord's advent, caught fire with love, and became one of those who gave their all to purchase Joseph. He was a chief of the yearning seekers, lord of lovers. Eloquently, he began to teach the faith and to prove the validity of the manifestation. He made converts, and because he yearned after God, he became a laughing stock in Kashan. Disparaged by friend and stranger alike, exposed to the taunts of his faithless companions. One of them said, "He has lost his mind," and another, "He's a public disgrace. Fortune has turned against him. He is done for." The bullies mocked him and spared him nothing. When life became untenable and open war broke out, he left his homeland and journeyed to Iraq, the focal center of the new light, where he gained the presence of all mankind's beloved. He spent some time there in the friend's company, composing verses that sang the praises of Baha'u'llah. Later he was given leave to return home and went back to live for a while in Kashan. But again he was plagued by yearning love and could bear the separation no more. He returned, therefore, to Baghdad, bringing with him his respected sister, the third consort. Here he remained until the bountiful protection of Baha'u'llah, until the convoy left Iraq for Constantinople, at which time Mirza Mehdi was directed to remain behind and guard the holy house. Restless, consumed with longing, he stayed on. When the friends were banished from Baghdad to Mosul, he was among the prisoners, a victim along with the others. With the greatest hardship, he got to Mosul, and here fresh calamities awaited him. He was ill almost all the time. He was an outcast and destitute. Still, he endured it for a considerable period, was patient, retained his dignity, and continually offered thanks. Finally, he could bear the absence of Baha'u'llah no longer. He sought permission, was granted to leave to come, and set out for the most great prison. Because the way was long and hard, and he suffered cruelly on the journey, when he finally reached the Acha prison, he was almost helpless and worn to the bone. It was during the time when the Blessed Beauty was imprisoned within the citadel at the center of the barracks. Despite the terrible hardships, Mirza Mehdi spent some days here in great joy. To him, the calamities were favors, the tribulations were divine providence, the chastisement abounding grace, for he was enduring all this on the pathway of God and seeking to win his good pleasure. His illness worsened. From day to day he failed. Then, at the last, under sheltering grace, he took his flight to the inexhaustible mercy of the Lord. This noble personage had been honored among men, but for God's love he lost both name and fame. He bore manifold misfortunes with never a complaint. He was content with God's decrees and walked the ways of resignation. The glance of Baha'u'llah's favor was upon him. He was close to the divine threshold. Thus, from the beginning of his life till the end, he remained in one and the same inner state, immersed in an ocean of submission and consent. Quote, "O my Lord, take me, take me," unquote, he would cry, until at last he soared away to the world that no man sees. May God cause him to inhale the sweet scent of holiness in the highest paradise, and refresh him with the crystalline wine cup tempered at the camphor fountain. Unto him be salutations and praise. His fragrant tomb is in Acha. Mishkin Chalam. Among the exiles, neighbors, and prisoners, there was also a second Mir Imad, the eminent calligrapher, Mishkin Chalam. Footnote. Mishk is musk. Mishkin Chalam means either musk-scented pen or jet-black pen. End of footnote. He wielded a musk-black pen, and his brows shone forth with faith. He was among the most noted of mystics and had a witty and subtle mind. The fame of this spiritual wayfarer reached out to every land. He was the leading calligrapher of Persia and well known to all the great. He enjoyed a special position among the court ministers of Tehran, and with them he was solidly established. He was famed throughout Asia Minor. His pen was the wonder of all calligraphers, for he was adept at every calligraphic style. He was, besides, a skilled astronomer. This highly accomplished man first heard of the cause of God in Isfahan, and the result was that he set out to find Baha'u'llah. He crossed the great distances, measured out the miles, climbing mountains, passing over deserts and over the sea, until at last he came to Adrianople. Here he reached the heights of faith and assurance. Here he drank the wine of certitude. He responded to the summons of God. He attained the presence of Baha'u'llah. He ascended to that apogee where he was received and accepted. By now he was reeling to and fro like a drunkard in his love for God, and because of his violent desire and yearning, his mind seemed to wander. He would be raised up and then cast down again. He was as one distracted. He spent some time under the sheltering grace of Baha'u'llah, and every day new blessings were showered upon him. Meanwhile, he produced his splendid calligraphs. He would write out the most great name, Ya Baha'u'llah, O Thou Glory of the All-Glorious, with marvelous skill in many different forms, and would send them everywhere. Footnote. In some of this artist's productions, the writing was so arranged as to take the forms of birds. When E.G. Brown was in Persia, he was told that, quote, these would be eagerly sought after by Persians of all classes, were it not that they all bore, as the signature of the penman, the following verse, quote, Dar diyar ichat shah isahib alam, bandiye ibab ibaha, mishkin chalam. That's translated loosely to, Lord of calligraphy, my banner goes before, but to Baha'u'llah, a bondsman at the door. Not else I am, Mishkin Chalam. Note the wordplay on door, which makes possible the inclusion of the Bab's name as well as Baha'u'llah's. End of footnote. He was then directed to go on a journey to Constantinople and set out with Jinab-i-Sayyah. When he reached that great city, the leading Persians and Turks received him with every honor at first, and they were captivated by his jet-black calligraphic art. He, however, began boldly and eloquently to teach the faith. The Persian ambassador lurked in ambush, betaking himself to the Sultan's vaziers. He slandered Mishkin Chalam. Quote, this man is an agitator, the ambassador told them, sent here by Baha'u'llah to stir up trouble and make mischief in this great city. He has already won over a large company, and he intends to subdue still more. These Baha'is turned Persia upside down. Now they have started in on the capital of Turkey. The Persian government put 20,000 of them to the sword, hoping by this tactic to quench the fires of sedition. You should awaken to the danger. Soon this perverse thing will blaze up here as well. It will consume the harvest of your life. It will burn up the whole world. Then you can do nothing, for it will be too late. Unquote. Actually, that mild and submissive man in that throne city of Asia Minor was occupied solely with his calligraphy and his worship of God. He was striving to bring about not sedition, but fellowship and peace. He was seeking to reconcile the followers of different faiths, not to drive them still further apart. He was of service to strangers and was hoping to educate the native people. He was a refuge to the hapless and a horn of plenty to the poor. He invited all comers to the oneness of humankind. He shunned hostility and malice. The Persian ambassador, however, wielded enormous power, and he had maintained close ties with the ministers for a very long time. He prevailed on a number of persons to insinuate themselves into various gatherings, and there to make every kind of false charge against the believers. Urged on by the oppressors, spies began to surround Mishkin Kalam. Then, as instructed by the ambassador, they carried reports to the prime minister, stating that the individual in question was stirring up mischief day and night, that he was a troublemaker, a rebel, and a criminal. The result was they jailed him, and they sent him away to Gallipoli, where he joined our own company of victims. They dispatched him to Cyprus and ourselves to the Akha prison. On the island of Cyprus, Jinabi Mishkin was held prisoner in the citadel at Famagusta, and in this city he remained a captive from the year 85 till 94. When Cyprus passed out of Turkish hands, Mishkin Kalam was freed and betook himself to his well-beloved in the city of Akha, and there he lived, encompassed by the grace of Baha'u'llah, producing his marvelous calligraphs and sending them about. He was at all times joyous of spirit, ashine with the love of God, like a candle burning its life away, and he was a consolation to all the believers. After the ascension of Baha'u'llah, Mishkin Kalam remained loyal, solidly established in the covenant. He stood before the violators like a brandished sword. He would never go halfway with them. He feared no one but God. Not for a moment did he falter, nor ever fail in service. Following the ascension, he made a journey to India, where he associated with the lovers of truth. He spent some time there, making fresh efforts every day. When I learned that he was getting helpless, I sent for him at once, and he came back to this most great prison, to the joy of the believers, who felt blessed to have him here again. He was at all times my close companion. He had amazing verve, intense love. He was a compendium of perfections, believing, confident, serene, detached from the world, a peerless companion, a wit, and his character like a garden in full bloom. For the love of God, he left all good things behind. He closed his eyes to success. He wanted neither comfort nor rest. He sought no wealth. He wished only to be free from the defilement of the world. He had no ties to this life, but spent his days and nights supplicating and communing with God. He was always smiling, effervescing. He was spirit personified, love embodied. For sincerity and loyalty he had no match, nor for patience and inner calm. He was selflessness itself, giving on the breaths of the spirit. If he had not been in love with the blessed beauty, if he had not set his heart on the realm of glory, every worldly pleasure could have been his. Wherever he went, his many calligraphic styles were a substantial capital, and his great accomplishment brought him attention and respect from rich and poor alike. But he was hopelessly enamored of man's one true love, and thus he was free of all those other bonds, and could float and soar in the spirit's endless sky. Finally, when I was absent, he left this darksome, narrow world, and hastened away to the land of lights. There, in the haven of God's boundless mercy, he found infinite rewards. Unto him be praise and salutations, and the Supreme Companion's tender grace. Ustad Ali Akbar I Najjar. Ustad Ali Akbar, the cabinet maker, was numbered among the just, a prince of the righteous. He was one of Persia's earliest believers and a leading member of that company. From the beginning of the cause, a trusted confidant, he loosed his tongue to proclaim the faith. He informed himself as to its proofs and went deep into its scriptures. He was also a gifted poet, writing odes in eulogy of Baha'u'llah. Exceptionally skilled in his craft, Ustad produced highly ingenious work, fashioning carpentry that, for intricacy and precision, resembled mosaic inlay. He was expert in mathematics as well, solving and explaining difficult problems. From Yazd, this revered man traveled to Iraq, where he achieved the honor of entering the presence of Baha'u'llah and received abundant grace. The Blessed Beauty showered favors upon Astad Ali, who entered his presence almost every day. He was one of those who were exiled from Baghdad to Mosul, and he endured severe hardships there. He remained a long time in Mosul in extremely straitened circumstances, but resigned to the will of God, always in prayer and supplication, and with a thankful tongue. Finally, he came from Mosul to the holy shrine, and here, by the tomb of Baha'u'llah, he would meditate and pray. In the dark of the night, restless and uneasy, he would lament and cry out. When he was supplicating God, his heart burned within him. His eyes would shed their tears, and he would lift up his voice and chant. He was completely cut off from this dust heap, this mortal world. He shunned it. He asked but one thing, to soar away, and he hoped for the promised recompense to come. He could not bear for the light of the world to have disappeared, and what he sought was the paradise of reunion with him, and what his eyes hungered to behold was the glory of the Abha realm. At last his prayer was answered, and he rose upward into the world of God, to the gathering place of the splendors of the Lord of Lords. Upon him be God's benediction and praise, and may God bring him into the abode of peace, as he has written in his book, quote, "For them is an abode of peace with their Lord," unquote. The Quran 6:127, quote, "And to those who serve him is God full of kindness," unquote. The Quran 3:28. Sheikh Ali Akbar e Mazghani. This chief of free souls of wanderers for the love of God was only an infant when in Mazghan he was suckled at the breast of grace. He was a child of the eminent scholar Sheikh E. Mazghani. His noble father was one of the leading citizens of Khamsar, near Khashan, and for piety, holiness, and the fear of God he had no peer. This father embodied all the qualities that are worthy of praise. Moreover, his ways were pleasing, his disposition good. He was an excellent companion, and for all these things he was well known. When he threw off restraint and openly declared himself a believer, the faithless, whether friend or stranger, turned their backs on him and began to plot his death. But he continued to further the cause, to alert the people's hearts, and to welcome the newcomers as generously as ever. Thus, in Khashan, the fame of his strong faith reached as high as the Milky Way. Then the pitiless aggressors rose up, plundered his possessions, and killed him. Ali Akbar, the son of him who laid down his life in the pathway of God, could live in that place no longer. Had he remained, he too, like his father, would have been put to the sword. He passed some time in Iraq and received the honor of being in the presence of Baha'u'llah. Then he went back to Persia, but again he longed to look upon Baha'u'llah, and with his wife he set out over the deserts and mountains, sometimes riding, sometimes on foot, measuring off the miles, passing from one shore to the other, reaching the holy place at last, and in the shade of the divine lote tree, finding safety and peace. When the beauty of the desired one had vanished from this world, Ali Akbar remained loyal to the covenant and prospered under the grace of God. By disposition and because of the intense love in his heart, he yearned to write poetry, to fashion odes and the ghazals, but he lacked both meter and rhyme. Quote, "I planned a poem, but my beloved told me, 'Plan only this, that thine eyes should behold me,'" unquote. With rapturous longing, his heart desired the realms of his compassionate Lord. Consumed by burning love, he left this world at last and pitched his tent in the world above. May God send down upon his grave from the kingdom of his forgiveness a heavy rain of blessings, bestow a great victory upon him, and grant him mercies, pressed down and running over in the retreats of heaven. Mirza Muhammad, the servant at the Traveler's Hospice. This youth of God was from Isfahan, and from an early age was known to its leading divines for his excellent mind. He was of gentle birth, his family was known and respected, and he was an accomplished scholar. He had profited from philosophy and history alike, from sciences and arts, but he thirsted after the secret of reality and longed for knowledge of God. His feverish thirst was not allayed by the arts and sciences, however limpid those waters. He kept on seeking, carrying on debates and gatherings of learned men until at last he discovered the meaning of the longing dream, and the enigma, the inviolable secret, lay open before him. Suddenly he caught the scent of fresh flowers from the gardens of the splendor of God, and his heart was ashine with a ray from the sun of truth. Whereas before he was like a fish taken from the water, now he had come to the wellspring of eternal life. Before he was a questing moth, now he had found the candle flame. A true seeker after truth, he was instantly revived by the supreme glad tidings. His heart's eye was brightened by the new dawn of guidance. So blinding was the fire of divine love that he turned his face away from his life, its peace, its blessings, and set out for the most great prison. In Isfahan he had enjoyed every comfort, and the world was good to him. Now his yearning for Baha'u'llah freed him from all other bonds. He passed over the long miles, suffered intense hardships, exchanged a palace for a prison, and in the Aqaba fortress assisted the believers and attended upon and served Baha'u'llah. He who had been waited upon now waited on others. He who had been the master was now the servant. He who had once been a leader was now a captive. He had no rest, no leisure, day or night. To the travelers he was a trusted refuge, to the settlers a companion without peer. He served beyond his strength, for he was filled with love of the friends. The travelers were devoted to him, and the settlers grateful. And because he was continuously busy, he kept silent at all times. Then the supreme affliction came upon us, and the absence of Baha'u'llah was not to be endured. Mirza Muhammad could not stay quiet, day or night. He wasted away like a candle, burning down. From the fiery anguish, his liver and heart were inflamed, and his body could bear no more. He wept and supplicated day and night, yearning to soar away to that undiscovered country. Quote, "Lord, free me from this absence," unquote, he would cry. "Let me drink of reunion's cup. Find me a lodging in the shelter of thy mercy, Lord of Lords." At last he quit this dust heap, the earth, and took his flight to the world that has no end. May it do him good, that cup brimming with the grace of God. May he eat with healthy relish of that food which gives life to heart and soul. May God lead him to that happy journey's end, and grant him an abundant share in the gifts which shall then be bestowed. Mirza Muhammad Ivakhil. One of the captives who were sent on from Baghdad to Mosul was Mirza Muhammad Ivakhil. This righteous soul was among those who became believers in Baghdad. It was there he drank from the cup of resignation to the will of God, and sought his rest in the shade of the celestial tree. He was a man high-minded and worthy of trust. He was also an extremely capable and energetic administrator of important affairs, famous in Iraq for his wise counsel. After he became a believer, he was distinguished by the title of Vakhil, deputy. It happened in this way. There was a notable in Baghdad by the name of Haji Mirza Hadi, the jeweler. He had a distinguished son, Agha Mirza Musa, who had received from Baha'u'llah the title Letter of Eternity. This son had become a staunch believer. As for his father, the Haji, he was a princely individual, known for his lavish open-handedness, not only in Persia and Iraq, but as far away as India. To begin with, he had been a Persian vazir, but when he saw how the late Fath Ali Shah eyed worldly riches, particularly the worldly riches of Persian vaziers, and how he snatched whatever they had accumulated, and how, not content with confiscating their costly vanities and lumber, he punished and tortured them right and left, calling it a legal penalty, the Haji dreaded that he too might be catapulted into the abyss. He abandoned his position as vazir and his mansion and fled to Baghdad. Fath Ali Shah demanded that the governor of Baghdad, Davud Pasha, send him back, but the Pasha was a man of courage, and the Haji was widely known for his able mind. Accordingly, the Pasha respected and helped him, and the Haji set up in a business as a jeweler. This is page 109. This memorial will continue on side 2. Please turn the tape.